You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. That would be me. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. By day, night, weekends, my whole life, the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. I get to have fun doing Lehigh Valley Discourse once a month, and WDIY is kind enough to give me that opportunity to have fun. Some of you know this painfully well, but perhaps the most inadequate aspect of our human services and healthcare systems is the availability and quality of behavioral health care, basically addiction and mental illness services. Liz Younger is all too familiar with the system, having been a therapist in a sole proprietorship for decades. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
Let's just start with a real basic question. What exactly is therapy? You know, they use the term shrink. Therapy isn't a miracle cure for anything, but what exactly is therapy?
Well, in general, therapy is where individuals come in and they share about their emotions, they share about the conflicts in their lives that seem to be increasing dysfunction in multiple parts of their lives, whether it's work, family, social. And a lot of times with therapy, it is about helping patients, clients to understand, you know, some of their thinking errors, help them to develop coping skills. Also, I find that therapy, it's really important to give those individuals who come into my office all of the power and let them know every single day that they are given choices and that they make those choices. And sometimes the outcomes aren't ideal, but either way, they still get the power to make that decision and that choice.
You don't cure mental illness with therapy, do you?
No. The best options are really, as they promote, medication and therapy. But it all depends upon how you look at mental illness when I answered that question.
So what makes you, or anyone else for that matter, qualified to do therapy?
Well, I've spent since 1988, working my craft in a variety of aspects. I feel that, at least for my professional work, I needed to have a much more global view of mental health and the context. I have a master's degree from Marywood University, as well as spent 3,000 hours under supervision to qualify to take the 4-hour licensed clinical social work exam. So that right there gives you the credentials and criteria.
So that's one of those bunches of letters after your name. There's, what is it, LCSW? Is that what you just...
Correct. Licensed clinical social worker. There's LPCs, licensed professional counselors. There are a variety of designations with regards to the letters, if you will, criteria for individuals to practice mental health.
Okay. So how do you get paid to do what you do?
Well, many times people will go through insurance companies. Others provide personal accounts, meaning that people will pay privately instead of using their insurance. Some people don't want to use their insurance because they don't want a record that they were getting mental health care, which goes to part of the issue. And others, you know, they'll do private because they don't have the amount of insurance, or they don't have good insurance, I should say, to cover the cost of care.
So is therapy a required service, or can an employer offer health benefits without covering therapy?
It can cover without providing for mental health benefits. Mm. However, there has been regulations that have yet to be executed that was supposed to bring mental health parity with physical health. Because, you know, in recent years in particular, we have noted that there is a mind-body connection. And when you think about trauma-informed care, that right there really helps to explain and define what that means. Most people may have heard the term trauma-informed care, but may not understand what exactly that means. And so what that means is that many times when people go for help, there is this understanding that somehow or another, we've all been exposed to a level of trauma. And for those individuals who might negate that or doubt that, right now, during this pandemic, we are all experiencing a level of trauma. Now, most times trauma is measured through the Adverse Childhood Events Survey. And the quote, I just saw the statistic from the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, indicated that 62% of Americans have at least one ACEs factor. And I think it's like 24% have three or more. Pretty high numbers.
So you're talking about basically post-traumatic stress syndrome, essentially?
Correct. Acute stress disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder. Many people, when they think of PTSD, they think of like the Afghanistan soldier or 9/11 survivors. But PTSD can happen to anyone. I mean, there's like the low-level kinds of PTSD from children who may have been verbally abused as children or emotionally abused as children. You know, sometimes there is a physical violence aspect, well, many times. So, you know, trauma can come in a variety of forms. And as I mentioned, right now during this pandemic, this is a trauma that is affecting all of us.
So how is that manifesting itself? What are you seeing as a result of, you know, COVID that you can attach to that trauma?
One of the things that occurred was in May, as I was selected to be a part of Congresswoman Susan Wild's virtual roundtable on mental health, I was, of course, trying to prepare. And one of the stories I came across at that time, which would have been May, was that there was a 600% increase in suicide hotline calls, as well as a year's worth of completed suicides in just a month. So those are staggering numbers.
Yeah, 600 times.
And at the time of Susan Wild's virtual roundtable, she quoted, my figure came from the group out in San Francisco, I think it's Walnut Creek Hospital. But Susan Wild, the day of the virtual roundtable, quoted 1,000% increase between April and May of contacts to the suicide hotlines.
Are you seeing suicidal people?
I will say that in the last month, I have seen more completed, and I'm sorry to say that, suicides, not necessarily my own caseloads, but just cases that I've become aware of. So, yes, I can say yes to that.
So what tools do you have as a therapist to actually right people's ship and help them actually get through that kind of stuff? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, one, as I talked in the beginning, I'm always about like helping people to make really good choices. Two, I will always be very honest with whomever is sitting in front of me. And if I have concerns, I will definitely come right out with, here are my concerns and here's what I need to do about it and here's what we're going to move forward with. So I do not allow a lot of leeway, especially when we're talking about self-harm issues. So if I suspect that there is self-harm involved in our conversation, my next phone call is to the hospital to provide clinical information and ensuring that that person gets to an emergency room so that they can get stable and come back to therapy.
What is it about COVID that's causing this? Is it people's isolation, their loneliness? Is it their fear for the planet? Is it a sense that there's nothing but no hopeless, there's no reason to be hopeful? What is it about the virus that's causing such mental health issues?
One of the obvious issues is the isolation and helplessness. We, unfortunately, as we've moved through since March at least, have had a variety of information provided to us, but none of it appears to be very consistent. And people are feeling a loss of power and control. And that's kind of the, you know, basis of trauma, right? Like things happen to you that you could not control. And that's a big piece of this pandemic is we have been giving different answers, different rules, different information about the symptoms, about the prevention strategies. So people really are very conflicted. You know, the wearing of the mask has become more of a political issue than it has been a health issue, which again really puts people at a disadvantage. We've got the conspiracy theorists, you know, that are saying wearing the masks is really just about giving into martial law. However, it's really about people actually getting COVID and suffering long-term effects. Doug Fay, who's a local Lehigh Valley resident, spent 65 days in the hospital, 12 of it in a ventilator. Wow. He lost 40% of his lung capacity, and as far as I can tell, that's permanent. He wow. lives right here up in Schnecksville-Slatington area.
Wow. Well, let's go back to the who pays for this stuff. What if you're poor? Does Medicaid pay for therapy?
Medicaid will pay for medical care, but currently the Lehigh Valley, we're just short on available providers. So that, you know, if you decide to pursue mental health, which you definitely should, it's taking a while to get an appointment, or the appointments that you're getting are like once a month or biweekly type of appointments. So there is a big issue with regards to the provision of mental health, particularly here in the Lehigh Valley.
Do you see poor people responding to these issues, the COVID issues, differently than middle class or upper middle class counterparts?
I think that's a really excellent question. And
does that mean you don't know the answer? That's okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, because of course, you know, there was an incident that happened right at the beginning of COVID, and it taught me that there's more going on than just COVID. When it happened at the time, I remember being so stunned because I was so focused on Corona, COVID, and then this event happened, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, things occur outside of the COVID. So I guess to answer your question, we all have other things going on in our lives that impact us and have been exacerbated by COVID, but they're not necessarily issues related to the virus. They are because of the isolation. They are because all of our mental health systems presently are overwhelmed. So many of like the larger organizations are, honestly, they're just offering monthly appointments to many people for mental health.
So the hospitals are required under Obamacare to do a community health needs assessment. It's required by law. And the hospitals in Lehigh Valley and everywhere, I think, are all conceding that the biggest problem in our healthcare system is behavioral health services or the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Have you seen any improvement or any greater effort on the hospital's part, given that they've got these community health needs assessments that say this is where the problem is in our system? Are you seeing progress there? Are you seeing more resources, more services?
I can say yes. I say so hesitantly because I know that Lehigh Valley Hospital Network and St. Luke's have all started to open up a variety of behavioral health services, some based in the community and some based more in the hospitals. But again, the pandemic has put us in a whole new situation whereby even those services are overwhelmed and the ability to accommodate, whether Obama put this out there to have it assessed, nobody counted on this. Mm-hmm. Nobody counted on the Tuesday rainstorm that kind of flooded all of our communities and our parks and our homes.
So how does somebody find the right care provider? How do they know to come to you instead of Bill Smith or anybody else?
The primary characteristic of good therapy is making sure that you have good chemistry with the therapist that you're using. That always makes the biggest difference. Of course, you want to make sure, you know, what their specialty is. Are they credentialed? Those things are very important. As for myself, I certainly you can go to Psychology Today, and there is lists and lists of therapists, most of them with photographs and a brief profile, which can help you to make a decision if it resonates. You can go to Health Grades. Health Grades also gives a summary of the therapists in the Valley, as well as many of them have good reviews. So you go to healthgrades.com. As for me, although I do get referrals from insurance companies, I get referrals from my Psychology Today site, most of my patients actually come from referrals from people who have been to me.
Word of mouth.
You know, so-and-so told me to give you a call, or a friend of mine, or whatever. The patient will call me and say, hey, I'm sending this person to you. And I could say I probably get 5 phone calls a week based upon that word of mouth. I never say no to talking to someone. I just think if they have the courage to make that phone call, then they deserve some time, and I will give them whatever support I can.
When you get a phone call, is your first question, what kind of health insurance do you have?
It is, but I think for reasons different.
I hate that.
No, I know. But I think it's for reasons different than for you. I want to know up front so that I can think about, if I can't serve them, where can they get help? And so I try and, you know, get a little feel for what they're calling about, and then I talk to them a little bit about where they might get best served for the issue they're calling about.
All right. I'm not an expert on this stuff. I know enough to know that the behavioral health care system is very inadequate, but my understanding is that there are two ways that you get to a mental health issue. One is genetically, you know, you're predisposed because of your genetic makeup. Your parents might have had the issue and gets passed on. And the other is some kind of, for lack of a better word, environmental stimulus, you know, that like in your case, you're talking about COVID as being a significant one, other kinds of trauma, being kicked around enough times, you know, unable to find a job and starting to feel like a loser because of it. Am I right about that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And so that is definitely a part of the research statistics. So people can be predisposed. But if I can, Alan, I am going to segue right about here. I have always had a great concern about the way that mental health is viewed in our culture, in our communities. And it's been made into a dirty word. And, you know, some of our more brilliant change agents have allegedly had a diagnosis, right? And one of my favorites was actually Dr. Semmelweis from 1857. And Dr. Semmelweis at the time concluded his patients were suffering, they were giving birth, and many of them were not surviving birth. And what he found was that if he washed his hands between the patients, he had a higher survival rate. In fact, he drove down the mortality rate. But when he went to try and share his idea, his fellow colleagues were offended that they would in any way be considered complicit in the death of their patients, or that they would be termed as being dirty. So they got him fired. And he started actually trying to promote himself on the streets. And finally, they convinced him to come to this mental health institution where they physically dragged him in and threw him in there. And he ended up dying 2 weeks later from the injuries. But what did that man discover? That washing your hands, which is something very critical to our COVID situation, what would save lives.
What kinds of things you think need to be done to make our behavioral health services better?
I do think that we need to change how people think about mental health. We need to redefine it.
Stigma?
Well, yes. I try not to use the word stigma, but yes. We need to reduce the stigma related to mental health so that people don't see it as tainting them or making them feel damaged. You know, if you go and get the help that you need, the support, if you will, right? I do a video series called Real People, No Masks Required. It is really about trying to make mental health a conversation. And I've had four really brilliant, I mean, many really good interviews. But one in particular was Jimmy Supra, and he's a harmonica player here in the Lehigh Valley.
A hell of a harmonica player.
Who was very, very open about his own experiences and going so far as to talk about receiving electric convulsive therapy and the benefits that he got from it. And saying, you know, once he got the treatment that he needed, his entire life got significantly better. And I bring up in the interview that shortly after that stint, they had a Jimmy Supra Day at Music Fest. So let's talk about how his mental health, he took care of it, he maintains it, he's aware of it, but he's also living a really great life, and he's being his best self.
We've run out of time. So Liz Younger, thanks for being here and joining us and talking about some issues that need much more attention than they're getting. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We talked about stigma, somebody who's been very courageous in dealing with the stigma issue. His representative, Mike Schlossberg, who's going to be joining us on the other side of the break. Liz, thanks.
Thank you, Alan, and you have a great day.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We just finished talking to therapist Liz Younger about the practical daily issues of doing therapy for people with mental illness. She talked about stigma, and stigma is one of the big issues. It's, we don't want anybody to know that we've got issues. But in my judgment, we've got a very, very courageous state legislator, Mike Schlossberg, who has been as bold and as heroic as anybody I know in this field. These are tough times politically. Our world is so torn and people are so cynical. It makes me fear for our future. In such times, you want to turn to those leaders who are completely authentic, totally transparent, and, well, likable. I'm close enough to the middle of the storm that I can tell you that one state representative has been almost stunningly candid about an issue that has found its way out of the shadows, and that is behavioral health. Mike has been straight up on mental illness. To talk to him, he seems like an upbeat guy, as you will find, and yet he has been open in talking about it, an important step in finally dealing with mental illness. I think the work Mike is doing leads the way on what may be the final frontier in inclusiveness and civil rights, and that is mental health issues. Mike, welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. Great to have you.
Thanks, Alan, and thanks for the kind words. That was very, very, very thoughtful. I appreciate it. I try to live up to that.
Well, you know, anybody who's been involved in poverty knows that mental health is a huge issue, and yet nobody ever deals with it. I mean, it's just never been a politically hot button, or it's been a politically hot button, but nobody's been willing to deal with it. What is it that gives you the courage to come out and say, enough is enough, we're going to deal with this as a society?
It's funny. It started for me almost by accident over anger of a Facebook status. So just for your listeners who are blessed enough to not be familiar with me, I have had depression, anxiety-related issues probably all my life. The diagnosis since I was 18. I've been in and out of therapy as needed, on medication since I was 18. There have been points in my life I've been so down, I've been suicidal. It's always something that I kind of held with me. And while I never really kept it a secret, it was never something I publicly spoke about. Now, what actually changed that was the suicide of Robin Williams in 2014. That was when it started. Robin Williams unfortunately died by suicide, and I was very upset. It was my experience with his suicide in particular was a shared experience. Because I know a lot of people with mental illness who were looking around going, if someone with that amount of money and time and passion and access to whatever help he needed could lose this battle, what hope do I have? And I was putzing around on Facebook, and I said a couple things about it. And there was some guy, I don't know who he is, some guy in Easton that I was Facebook friends with, who said something to the effect of, so sad Robin Williams killed himself, he just needed to pray harder. And I lost my mind when I wrote that status. And that's, unfortunately, that's an ignorance that comes with the territory when it comes with dealing with mental health. And I was infuriated, and I wrote a couple of angry Facebook statuses, and the next day I was still pissed. And that anger turned into an op-ed in the Morning Call where I discussed my own issue and the need to really break the stigma that surrounded mental health. And it all just kind of flowed from there. I was blown away in a variety of respects about the pushback to the op-ed that I wrote. But what I was most blown away by was what's become my running joke, which is I now know the prescription of more people in the Lehigh Valley than I ever anticipated. Because if it didn't resonate with a person on an individual level, it did with their family. Everybody knows somebody, and everyone's too ashamed to discuss it.
And it knows no class, it knows no color, it knows none. No faith perspective.
Nope. We are all equally at risk. Well, it could happen to anybody. However, there are unquestionably certain things that make somebody more likely to suffer from mental illness, including things like poverty, lack of access to financial resources, homelessness, military experience, being a first responder. So we know that there are risk factors, and our job as a society needs to be to do a better job of trying to mitigate those risk factors.
Since you came out like this, have other legislators come to you and thanked you? Have they stayed in the shadows, or have they come out themselves? I mean, do you have anybody who has joined you on the stage on this issue?
I cannot think of any other state representative who has discussed their own mental health. I mean, I've had people make comments to me, certainly. I will say that we've certainly had no shortage of legislators who have discussed their own stories in some other way. We've got quite a few folks who have had addiction-related issues. One of my colleagues, probably the bravest colleague that I have, Mark Rossi, who was unfortunately repeatedly sexually assaulted by a priest, turned that into a crusade for justice for his fellow assault victims. We had a member named Louise Bishop who was, I believe, publicly discussed her own sexual assault at the hands of a family member. Those stories resonate. I think what people forget sometimes is that, contrary to popular belief, every one of us is human. Like the vast majority of people in the legislature, Democrat
not
or
Donald
Republican,
Trump. You're saying that Donald Trump is a human?
Most people are human, Alan. Most people are human.
Couldn't resist that.
No,
one, sorry.
Truly, like the vast majority of us walk around just trying to wake. The vast majority of us wake up at the beginning of the day and go, "All right, what can I do to help people today?" Yeah. And for a lot of us, that turned into, let me talk about my story, because humans are, this is something I really learned when I started talking about myself, we're all hardwired to hear stories. And so that's, if people out there get anything from what I'm saying, it's tell your story, because it can make a difference. I've had plenty of people tell me that they went to therapy because of what I did, or started talking about it publicly because of what I did. And I'm not saying that to talk about myself. I'm trying to say that to inspire others. What you say one-on-one to somebody else can make a world of difference.
Have you paid any price for your candor? Have you had any political kickback, you know?
The biggest surprise from all of this has been it made my political career. And that was not something I was consciously thinking of when I did it. People were so appreciative of me coming out. Now, inevitably, there is, you know, random anonymous blog comments every now and then. But for every one of those, there's 100 positive comments. And I've had quite a few people tell me, I disagree with everything you stand for, but what you did on mental health was so important, I'm voting for you anyway. And again, that's not a statement about me. That's a statement about the prevalence of this issue. And that's been a real, I never anticipated that it would turn into such a net political positive for my career. I was just a pissed off guy writing an op-ed, and it kind of went from there.
Yeah. So what are you working on, Mike? You have legislative issues that you're pursuing
We just got one over the top. We got a big one over the top. I had a piece of legislation that started last session, didn't finish, but the governor signed it, that gives additional mental health resources to first responders. One of the things that I've come across is that, as I said, there are certain groups who are more likely to have depression, mental health, addiction, or die by suicide. One of those groups is first responders, police, fire, EMS, coroner, 911 officers, state troopers.
I can imagine the things
officers.
They see are...
I can't, and I will, in the course of doing this particular bill, I'll never forget an old Allentown firefighter named Dave Schmidt telling me one day, Mike, every one of us has that one call that you never forget, that you see in your dreams every night. And that really stuck with me. So we passed a bill, bipartisan. A chief Republican sponsor was a Republican, a volunteer firefighter out of Bucks County named Frank Ferry. And we passed a bill that created a specific peer-to-peer hotline to be staffed by first responders, put more money into training, and put some requirements on critical incident stress management training, and basically give more resources to first responders. First responders are more likely to die by suicide than they are on the job.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's something not a lot of people realize. I have a wonderful colleague. Her name is Jenna Mara, from Democrat from Delco. She lost her dad to gun suicide, a Philly firefighter. These men and women see things that I can't even begin to fathom, and we need to make sure that we care for them and that we bring this issue to the light. We finished that one. Going forward, continued funding for mental health and enacting the suicide prevention plan that we spent all of 2019 running around the state, putting together a suicide prevention plan. I was the co-chair of this task force. It involved members of the legislature, the governor's administration. We held listening sessions throughout the state. We had a plan ready to go around March, and you know, then March, the world kind of fell off a cliff. So we're coming back to it. We just got to get there.
Is there a major initiative that you think needs to be vetted that you can't get anybody to pay attention to?
That's a great question. Pay attention to and political willpower, two very different things. Yeah. The biggest thing, if I had a magic wand that could change one thing, it would be the mental health care worker shortage. People can't get into a psychiatrist or psychologist
because there aren't
enough of them. I hear about it all the time in my office. And in the long term, as unsexy as it is, we need to not only boost that workforce, but we also need to we need to ease access. One of the benefits of COVID is that it waived a lot of regulations when it came to telehealth, which is so hugely important.
Right.
But when this emergency expires, so will that order. So we've got to make it easier for people to see their therapist, and that means create a pipeline of mental health workers, especially as rates of mental illness, addiction, and suicide continue to rise.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse, WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Last piece of the show tonight, we're going to talk about the Lehigh Valley Song Project, a very exciting initiative. So, Mike, the world has gotten pretty damn weird. Yeah. I mean, 2020 is hard to imagine that we could top it for tumult, for just crises. I mean, it's crazy out there. And that's probably not a good word to use when we're talking about mental health. But COVID, what are the implications of COVID from your perspective as a lawmaker?
So multifaceted, obviously. Now, as we have the conversation from mental health, you got to see it from a few different ways. First of all, people have been screaming, "Oh, the devastation caused by social isolation," and there is truth to that. There's no question that this period, from a stress perspective, has just been absolutely damning. But such as it is that I'm more worried about the long term mental health effects, and in particular, the economics. Mental health and economics are tied together. That's not to say that people who don't have as much money are more likely to suffer from mental illness, but people who lose money, who do face eviction, they are more likely to suffer from mental illness and more likely to die by suicide. Right now, we just had a hearing on this in the House, and the consensus was that right now, mental health, though obviously not doing well, at a systemic perspective, is okay. The concern is that the longer this goes, the more economic devastation that it brings, what's going to happen to some of those people who start to view suicide as their only escape from an economic nightmare? That's what I really worry about in the long run, at least from a suicide perspective. You know, from a mental health perspective, it's so strange, the random things that COVID brings to light, that any crisis brings to light. COVID has brought to, and the mental health crisis has brought to light, the need for broadband internet across the state. I know that sounds weird, but we can get people into therapy, but we can't get people into therapy if they don't have a solid phone connection or good internet access. And that obviously applies to education as well. And in our poorer urban and rural centers, that has been huge.
You know, that's interesting. We created a group that we're calling Think Tank that is looking at what are the long-term implications of COVID on our world, you know, by 5-10 years out. Like, for example, if working at home is now more acceptable, what are we going to do with all that commercial office space that's going to become surplus office space?
And
think about the impact that's going to have on the marketplace in general, you know? So, you know, the issue of the long-term effects is something I'm really interested in. So go ahead. Absolutely. Tell me what you think.
No, well, and that's really the question. If anything has changed from the recession, and I wasn't as active, so I have a hard time speaking about that one coherently, it's that I think people know what's coming. I think people are aware that we're going to face a real mental health crisis. I know that, for example, people are talking about it more and are doing a better job of getting out information about those resources. Like, one of the first things the governor started talking about at the start of COVID, when this really began to hit a crisis point, was, hey, if you're having mental health issues, here are the numbers you can call or text. So Dr. Levine has done the same thing. That's been useful, but again, we're looking at devastation, economic devastation, the likes of which nobody has ever seen before. So I worry about it in the long term, no doubt about it. And hopefully, you know, good changes will come from this as well. But what you just said about all the unused office space and the implications that's going to have on the suburbs and the cities, how many times in the Great Recession did we hear the phrase, do more with less?
Yeah.
It made my head want to explode.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the, but now eventually we adapt and eventually we will. You're right, Alan. I don't know what we do with all this office space.
Yeah, and you could take that and extend it to all kinds of other things, you know. Mm-hmm. Here's an example. People in New York totally freaked out over the way that disease spread, and it spread so fast in large part because it's such a densely populated space.
Yep,
absolutely. People are making a beeline west. And I've said for a long time that the New Jersey and New York's affordable housing program is called Pennsylvania. Well, this is going to be a new wave of people pouring out of New York looking for an alternative place to live, you know?
Well, and we're seeing that already. You look at the real estate market right now, it is so insanely tight. There's no inventory, and when there is, the home disappears in 3 seconds. And that's going to eventually start to really push housing value up, if it hasn't already. I'm not a realtor. I'm not an expert in that subject. But that's a really good point and something we are, kind of seeing already. But again, you know, and this impacts from the mental health perspective, but also public policy in general. I don't know if people have really started to realize just how many ways COVID is going to change the world.
Yeah. Well, for me, just not being able to watch, sit in Camden Yard and watch an Orioles game is driving me nuts.
It's heartbreaking. Well, you're in good company. As we, it looks like we're going to wind up losing entire college sports seasons, and we're having conversations, obviously, about high school sports. I have to say, you can feel nothing but sympathy for so many people whose lives have been utterly destroyed by this. You know, that includes, maybe that destroyed is a broad term for all of us, but everyone's been affected. But the notion of doing contact sports in the middle of a highly contagious pandemic is just absurd to me. How can we do it unless we're in a literal bubble like the NBA and the NHL?
Right. When you think about how important the junior year is for a kid who's spent his entire life, since age 4 being coached in whether it's soccer or field hockey or baseball, and then to have their junior year, which is the most important year for getting the attention of Division I scouts, taken away from you, that might not sound important, but it's critically important to a young person who's worked so hard,
Absolutely. Well, a survey came out the other day that said 2/3 of youth athletes are experiencing depression or anxiety because of losing their sport. And, anyone who mocks that really needs to grow some empathy, because that's a very real thing. And my line during this entire thing has been, when it comes to policymaking or public health decisions in the middle of a pandemic, there are no good choices, just slightly less bad ones. All of us are lurching from one slightly less bad choice to the other, especially given that we still don't have a national strategy on testing, on quarantine, on isolation, on unemployment. I mean, how can we not agree to compensate people at the federal level and keep the economy alive? Like, do they not understand what's going to happen as people miss more and more payments? It is a frustrating moment.
It's very difficult to understand how people have so little empathy or sympathy for others. There are lots of people who do, but not enough, and we're paying a price for that. Mike Schlossberg, state representative, covers Allentown and part of its suburbs. Thanks for your courage on this issue. Thanks for joining me on the show, and have a great day, Mike.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Alan.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We're going to talk about the Lehigh Valley Song Project, a good news story. So stick with us.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We've been talking about a miserable issue for the last 40 minutes, and that is the issue of mental illness and behavioral health and the things that COVID is doing about it. Now we're going to switch to something really cool. last show, I announced that I was going to have a segment on my show each month that was called The Good News. I would have people who I know are creating good news call in and announce that good news. And this time, instead of having a call-in, I've got the person who's made it happen with me here in the studio, and that is Michael Duck. I met Michael when he was a reporter for the Morning Call. He covered a couple of my things along the way. I've been covered by just about every reporter I think has ever been in there.
I don't doubt it.
But I lost him along the way, and he turns up on this really cool project. Sharon Zondag, who is the executive director of the Laros Foundation, calls me and says that she's heard this great feel-good song on the internet about Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
You should check it out, Alan. So I listened to it, and I thought it was downright hokey. And I told her that, but she still sent out a note to a few other people saying, look, we should be able to do something like this. And I don't know if it was Touchstone or if it was Michael Duck in specifically.
It was a combination. There are a lot of people that worked together to make this happen.
But who said this is worth pursuing?
Mm-hmm.
Was that you or was that Bill George?
It was Bill George. It was me. It was JP Jordan and the folks over at Touchstone saying, yeah, we think this is something that could have some legs, something that could make a real impact. And so Bill initially came to me and said, before Touchstone was officially involved, Bill came to me and said, hey, what would you be willing to do this? And it did, you know, capture my imagination. And I absolutely hear what you're saying about the Louisville song. But at the same time, I could also appreciate the sentiment that was behind it. Sort of like, yeah, how do we rally together? And so Sharon had reached out to Kira Willey. Many people know her from her musical work and her work with kids and yoga and wonderful things like that here in the Valley. I reached out to another friend of mine, Jason Reef of Freestone Productions. And Kira and Jason and I started talking about the specifics, and then Touchstone became officially involved in just a little bit. And they saw a home for it. Touchstone saw a home for it in sort of the larger context of Festival Unbound and all the great events that they have coming up, that we have coming up for Festival Unbound in September and October. And we said, all right, let's do this. They were already talking about doing an event in July to sort of set the table for things coming up with Festival Unbound. And so we grafted this song project onto that idea. We had a show, which I believe you attended, in the Touchstone Theater parking lot and trying to find a way to do things in a safe and with distance between people, and had people just on the balconies on the back of Touchstone Theater performing, a number of people from the song project. And it's just, how do we bring people together? How do we make art in this time of coronavirus? And how do we put together a message that is genuine and that also says a vision of what we believe and what we aspire to be?
I am a huge music guy. I mean, you know, I've got very strong feelings about music that I like, and I've got very strong feelings about music that I hate. I especially think that music, like art generally, has an obligation to reflect what's going on in our world. You know, I mean, I've always been a Grateful Dead fan, but I have no idea what the hell their lyrics are about. You know, what is a China Cat Sunflower, for example? What's a black-throated wind? I think we have an obligation to kind of lay things out.
Sure.
And this is sort of in the tradition of the guy from the Boomtown Rats. you know, who did the Do They Know It's Christmas, and then USA for Africa.
Sure.
And we that's, are the world. That yeah. song, which was a really awful song. But what made it cool was the power of all the musicians right. that were part of it.
Right.
It's sort of a that kind of a concept in this project.
Yeah, very much so. It was about how do we bring together people from every different kind of musical genre, very much like We Are the World. How do we bring together people from different life experiences? You know, there's a wonderful 10-year-old girl, Manya Gope, from the community music school Lehigh Valley and Berks, and she's amazing in this video all the way through to Dave Fry, you know,
yeah.
who just had his 70th birthday, you know, and a whole range in between, just every kind of life experience, and to come back in around this message of saying, yeah, everybody needs freedom. Let's rally around these ideas. Let's all have freedom from disease. Let's say everybody deserves freedom from violence as a way that speaks not only to this moment that we're in, but also that has some resonance. Whenever you hear this song, it's going to say, oh, yes, these are still ideals that make sense that we want to believe in.
So you wrote the lyrics and the tune.
Well, there were a lot of people who had different parts in it. So Kira and Jason and I have been sort of talking about, okay, how do we make this work? What's the reason for the song's existence? And knowing that it wasn't just going to be, hey, you know, the Louisville song was, hey, we're going to get through this coronavirus thing. And we you know, we appreciated that. We wanted to sort of extend beyond that. I had recently read an essay that talked about the difference between freedom to and freedom from, and how oppressed peoples all over the place are often have to sacrifice this freedom from, and saying, no, that's something we can all believe in. We were coming up on the 4th of July. We were talking about ways that we were all connected because of the coronavirus, as well as the protests that have been going on that are raising really important questions about our society and what justice actually looks like. And how do we sort of bring all these ideas together? I mentioned last time Richie Havens' song Freedom that he basically improvised at Woodstock.
Right there on stage.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, using the lyrics from Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child, the African-American spiritual, and putting all these things together, it very quickly crystallized into this idea of a song that would have this sort of really simple structure, really just be a blank canvas for all these great performers to come in and do amazing things. And so in a very uncharacteristically quick bout of creativity, in just a couple of days, went from sort of the initial concept to having a demo that I passed along to Jason and Kira. And we refined it from there. Kira helped, and the two of us worked together on adding another verse that hit on this idea of connection more specifically. JP from Touchstone contributed some really important ideas that sort of shaped the whole idea of having Danny Class start off with that Cuatro Puertorriqueño at the beginning. I'm like, oh, that's a really great, you know, to change the people's expectations of where the song is going. As well as Grayson, Matthew Mosley, this hip-hop artist who's local here, he wrote the hip-hop verse, he wrote the rap verse by himself, but we were so happy with what he did with that, and we picked up on these themes from the lyrics that were already there and just ran with it, and made it very personal, as well as looking at all these big concepts that we're talking about.
Our listeners, hopefully you'll stick around. We're going to play the song for you shortly. I'm surprised at how many people don't know about it. And, I was so thrilled by it. I thought it was so cool. It was so well done. I had no idea you had that kind of talent. That is a great song.
Well, it's great that you could be part of it, that Alan is one of the people that's featured in the video.
Well, yeah, but it was like a split second. I'm jealous of your musicianship. I wish I could play a guitar like you play. And
thank you.
And your performance in it was really great. The blue-eyed soul that you inserted into it in terms of your own talent was remarkable.
We have so many great performers who are part of this. A lot of them are people that people would know of. People like mentioned Dave Fry, and people like Bev Conklin, better known as BC. She does the first verse of it. Dana Gaynor, Hector Rosado, you know, people know his work. But also a lot of people that people may not be familiar with, people like Liliana Cunha, who does that amazing guitar solo after that first chorus.
How old is she?
She's a student at the Lehigh Valley Charter High School for the Arts.
So she's a teenager?
Yeah.
She looked to me like she was about 12 or 13 years old.
She's a teenager.
And my gosh, what a great riff.
I know. And based on her poise, I thought that she had already graduated from Charter Arts. And she's like, no, I'm just going. I'm like, well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And we also reached out to people like the Young People's Philharmonic of the Lehigh Valley, Nick Suarez, the clarinet player that you see in there.
Stringed instruments?
Not really stringed instruments, but we wrote horn parts and woodwind parts so we can involve as many people as possible. And so you've got a sousaphone in there, you've got trumpet, you've got Jeremy Joseph from the Big Easy Easton Brass.
Isn't there a tuba?
The sousaphone. The difference between a tuba and sousaphone is you can actually carry a sousaphone while you're marching, whereas a tuba, you kind of have to sit down with it. But yeah, so to get young people involved and to get people who've been doing this for a little while involved. And I also want to make sure I talk about this too, that so if people want to see the video, if you go to touchstone.org/LVBfree, all lowercase, all one word, LVBfree.
And B is just the letter.
Just the letter. But that'll take you to the video on YouTube. But you can also, if you're on YouTube, search Lehigh Valley Be Free, and it should pop right up.
Yeah, you know, I unfortunately in radio we don't have the ability to show the video.
Right.
But you gotta watch it as well as hear it. It is a beautiful piece of work.
And there are great things like the step team. The step team from Liberty High School, they're featured in, and while Jeremy's wailing on his trumpet, we've got the step team doing a great dance that they came up with. Like, that's just amazing.
The trumpet was incredible. It really was.
He's really, really good.
I hope, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I love doing these shows. I appreciate WDIY giving me the opportunity to do it. I want to thank Neil Heaver, who has as much to do with the existence of this radio station as any single person in Lehigh Valley. Neil runs that equipment over there that I couldn't begin to even figure out how to use. So I always want to thank Neil for making me not look like or sound like a complete fool. Michael, your musicianship, you have a reference to John Coltrane in the name. what's your stage name?
So, yeah, I perform as Not for Coltrane. And so if they search on social media for Not for Coltrane or Facebook.com/Not for Coltrane or Instagram.com/Not for Coltrane, my dog was named Coltrane. He was a rescue. We said that's an amazing name for a dog. We're totally going to keep that. But it also meant that whenever Coltrane, the dog, did something he wasn't supposed to do, like getting up on the table and eating my dinner, that's not for Coltrane, not for Coltrane. Like, oh, that has kind of a ring to it. I'm gonna use that.
Got it.
So yeah, that's where that's from.
So now we have the responsibility of getting that in front of as many people as
Absolutely.
We possibly can. And I've sent it out to easily 300 people.
Great. Thank you.
I got an enormous number of responses that were very complimentary. People saying it was stunning. I cannot emphasize enough how cool this project is and how much you should check it out.
Yeah. Well, and we're so grateful for anybody who can support it by watching it and sharing it like you're doing.
And contributing to Touchstone.
Yeah, people can contribute. If you go to touchstone.org/LVSongDonate, that's all one word, all lowercase, touchstone.org/LVSongDonate. And also there's a link in the YouTube video as well. You can support not just the Lehigh Valley Song Project, but all these great events that we have coming up with Festival Unbound in September and October. It's things that are an event where medical workers will get a chance to talk about their experiences in the time of COVID. A walking tour called Rumi Nation that's, I'm so eager to hear all these pieces. Tales of Hope and Resistance, a collaboration with Mock Turtle Marionettes, and a reprise of Dictators for Dummies that Christopher Shore from Moravian College did a couple years ago. He's bringing it back now with action figures. It's just so much cool stuff. And so if people are able to go to touchstone.org/LVSongDonate, it supports not just the song project, but also all these great events that we have coming up.
So I'm going to end the show tonight with this song, Lehigh Valley Be Free.
That's it.
I want to thank Michael Duck for his extraordinary talent that he applied to this feel-good project about the Lehigh Valley. And if by the time you finish watching this, you have not decided that the Lehigh Valley is a pretty damn cool place after all, you're not paying enough attention. So this is Lehigh Valley Be Free. And Michael Duck, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much, Alan. Thank you.
distance and closed doors to keep our neighbors safe and healthy. We've done all this and more. Yes, we sacrificed and we took a stand all across this land.
Where the Lenape lived by the Bending Creek, where the Bell of Liberty was hidden from redcoat thieves, where believers of many nations came to worship free. Let's live out the best parts of our legacy. Lehigh Valley Free.
Everybody needs freedom. Everybody needs freedom. The people all deserve freedom. Let's stand up for that freedom. Freedom, yes, that's the only way. Lehigh Valley be free today.
Many lives, freedom from hunger, so our families can thrive. Freedom from hatred, let's cast our fears aside. As we come together, freedom makes us strong. Freedom is where we belong.
Freedom from violence, from those who intimidate. Freedom from poverty, we know it's not too late.
Game but not a gangster, I'm just trying to be me. Been fighting all my life, yeah, I witnessed some beef. For my twins, I'll fight just to give them some peace. So I'm dotting on my I's as I'm crossing my T's. But showing what it means to live life at ease. Made a promise to my brothers and a promise I'll keep. To skip the nightmares and go straight for the dream. I'm against all the people that let power corrupt. The evil in this world is simply doing too much. I learned about the hustle, made it ride the mud. And got me a home for the people I love. Break bread with my brethren, give them gems full of lessons. So our life don't have to be the likes of a Tekken 7. Love, we have to mention the answer to all questions. And once we have that, start collecting the blessings.
So many hearts are opened, but what we've all been through, just like the bread we'll share, consciousness is rising too. We're all connected. You help me and I help you. Stronger together, that's who it will be. Lehigh Valley be free.
Everybody needs freedom. Everybody needs freedom. The people all deserve freedom. Let's stand up for that freedom.